Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The GOP of old has grown stale and moss-covered. I don't think we need to name any names, do we?
No name spelled M-C-C-A-I-N, I suspect. Rand Paul there at CPAC yesterday, the Conservative Political Action Conference taking place this weekend at a time when the party is reexamining itself after the November election results, the Republican Party, that is not a conservative party per se. With us now, Rich Lowry from National Review. Rich, among other things, wrote a piece earlier this month called The Unpopular Party, Why Reducing the Debt Can't Be the Only Republican Agenda. Rich, thanks a lot for giving us some time today. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I'm not there, but from the sound bites I've been hearing, there seems to be a meaningful divide being played out in the open at CPAC on social issues. Let me play a few clips and get your take on this. Here's a young Republican at the conference named Francesca Chambers, who was on NPR's Morning Edition today.
I reject the notion that young people don't identify as conservatism or they think that conservatism is a dirty word. I don't think that that's true at all. What they didn't like about the Republican Party had a lot more to do with some of the social issues, gay marriage.
What they didn't like about the Republican Party had more to do with some of the social issues, gay marriage, she said. But on the other hand, here is the senator who is arguably the biggest rising star in the next Republican generation, Florida's Marco Rubio.
Just because I believe that states should have the right to define marriage in a traditional way does not make me a bigot. Just because we believe that life, all human life, is worthy of protection at every stage in its development does not make you a chauvinist.
So, Rich Lowry, do you think the contrast between those two clips represents an important discussion taking place at the conference or in general in Republican circles?
Yeah, there's clearly a tension there. I think it's more relevant on gay marriage than on anything else, where there is genuinely a generational split and where public opinion seems to be moving against the conservative position on that. Abortion, I think, is overplayed, and so long as you don't have, you know, your Todd Akins and your Richard Murdochs blowing themselves up over the issue, it's actually been a conservative success. You see young people are more pro-life than older folks. There's not the big gender divide on it, if you look at Gallup's numbers as portrayed. And as a general matter, the Republican Party just can't afford to kick away millions and millions of voters who are social conservatives and vote for the party, even though they don't like a lot of other stuff about it, including its economics, because they're socially conservative.
I am a little surprised as I'm getting to know what Rubio is about. Again, as someone who's supposed to represent the future, is being that conservative on sexual social issues, and I hear the distinction you're making between abortion and homosexuality and its place, but particularly on homosexuality, is this going to define him as more retro and maybe less appealing to a general election youth vote than some people have been assuming?
Well, I mean, he's a conservative, and so it shouldn't surprise us that he has these positions. And you know, you're not going to win the Iowa caucus if you're anywhere else on those things, and he has big presidential ambitions. Not that I don't think he's entirely sincere in those positions. And I mean, my biggest thing with the Republicans, every time they lose, people point to the social issues. And I think that the big thing that where Republicans lost in 2012 is they lost the debate over the economy. And everything will look a little bit better if they actually have a bread and butter economic message that is beyond sort of, as Rand Paul said, although this may not be what he meant, you know, the sort of stale talking points left over from the 1980s. It's just marginal tax rates are not the single most important
thing in people's
lives. Economy now. Yeah, and so that's what I think needs the most freshening up, and if I could wave a magic wand, that's what I'd have the party focus on over anything else.
And to continue the contrast, there was the rising libertarian Rand Paul also speaking yesterday, no filibuster required, also referring to young people.
They doubt Social Security will be there for him, for them. They worry about jobs and money and rent and student loans. They want leaders that won't feed them a line of crap or sell them short.
So what do you make of the contrast between these two rising stars, in particular, possible presidential contenders Marco Rubio and Rand Paul? Did they present really different visions yesterday?
Well, you know, the big contrast between Rand Paul and Marco Rubio is on foreign policy and national security, because Marco Rubio is very much a traditional hawk. And Rand Paul, as we, if you didn't know this, you know, as of a week or so ago, is not.
I noticed that.
So I think that's the big difference. Rand Paul is a traditionalist on the moral issues. He's very pro-life on abortion. But he's, you know, obviously a libertarian and his father's son. And, you know, I agree with him on drug policy. And, you know, when I speak on campuses, that's an easy applause line when you say you want to decriminalize marijuana. But I think it's really the wrong way to think about all these issues, to think, okay, how do we appeal to this given demographic on this issue? I mean, the party should think about what sound public policy is that's good for the country and then go about selling it.
Rich Lowry, my guest on WNYC, editor of National Review, also a columnist on Politico. So let me follow up on Rand Paul being the son of his father. I mean, he's getting a lot of press as a mainstream contender for 2016, especially after the filibuster. But from what I can tell, the constitutionalism that he talks about and his filibuster over drones and due process reflect the same libertarian views that marginalized his father, who went so far as to characterize the U.S. as having a malevolent foreign policy, as being the aggressor with respect to Iran, as you know. Are they more different than I realize, or could the Republican primary voters in 2016 be that different from the past?
Yeah, well, I mean, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but it's not exactly where the tree is. And Rand Paul's much savvier. You're not going to see him saying those sort of hot button kind of things about U.S. foreign policy that his dad did. And he's much more concerned sort of operating within the system. He's still kind of an outsider, but he wants to make a difference in a way his dad didn't. I mean, his dad was totally just a forlorn cause to kind of hold up the banner of liberty. And I think his son is much more ambitious than that. And my early prediction for 2016 would be, at the very least, Rand Paul is going to have a Howard Dean-like run in the Republican Party, where he's really going to ignite the grassroots. He's going to be the front runner for at least some period of time. And he's very, you know, he's a very, as I say, very shrewd, very smart, very articulate, and knows what he's about. And his dad came across as a little bit more just sort of the cranky guy who's been in libertarian politics forever and doesn't care whether he makes a difference or not. He just wants to hold up the bit, catch the falling flag of liberty.
Right. And I hear what you're saying about that distinction. On the other hand, there was that Senate resolution in the fall. Did you notice it? That was against, it doesn't declare war exactly on Iran, but it says the U.S. will do all it can to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. And it passed the Senate 90-1. Who was the one? You know who the one was.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. But I'm sure when he went down on the floor to defend that, if he did, he didn't say we're the aggressor against Iran. You know, he's just not going to get into the rhetorical brambles the way his father did sort of instinctively, it seemed.
Here's another Rubio clip from yesterday where he takes a shot at how the left is watching the Republican Party struggle for redefinition.
Now, as soon as I'm done speaking, I'll tell you what the criticism on the left is going to be. Number one, he drank too much water. Number two, that he didn't offer any new ideas. And there's the fallacy of it. We don't need a new idea. There is an idea. The idea is called America, and it still works.
So that's good home team boosterism at CPAC. But on his dismissal of new ideas there, is that going to cut it for a supposed youth candidate in a party that you say is is only about the debt anymore and needs to be about broader economics?
Yeah, well, a couple things. One, I think he needs to drop the water jokes. You know, in the immediate aftermath, you make fun of yourself, and then you got to let it go, or it seems as though it's becoming an obsession.
It's only been a few weeks.
Maybe this is a little bit logic chopping, but certainly it's playing to the audience there. But two, he's not really true to what he says. He literally means we need no new ideas in the sense of new policies, because he's out there on comprehensive immigration reform, although interestingly he didn't mention it in his speech yesterday. And two, he has been, I would love to see Republicans focus much more than they have on health policy and education. And he's actually the one Republican at the national level who's been focused on college costs and beginning to develop an approach to how do we make higher education more affordable and make sure it is delivering the goods to students at a reasonable price.
So
that's a new policy initiative. Now, maybe he would argue it's not a new idea, mm-hmm. Because the big,
right.
grand idea is America that we've, came down to us since 1776, but it is a new policy. And I think if you had him in a room, he would acknowledge we need new iterations of our ideas or new expressions of the old.
And that
idea.
Would include on the students, the cost of college or access to college, that would include different things than, say, more Pell Grants, which we might associate with the Democrats?
Yeah, I mean the intellectual critique of the current system is that you pour financial aid into the system and it just leads to ever rising costs. And I think we need to focus on more accountability. If you look at the how colleges do graduating students in 4 years, it's just absolutely atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers. And there are studies showing, that students do about half the work they used to, in the 1960s. So I personally think we need to examine the whole model of whether we need kids to go to college 4 years and, do a lot of partying, a lot of socializing, and not necessarily work that hard. And there are a lot of degrees. I'm not sure whether kids are really getting anything out of it. So I think the whole area needs to be reexamined. And I think just that clip sells Rubio a little bit short.
Right. So one other thing about this clip before you go, in dismissing the left, and obviously the right's going to dismiss the left's criticism and the left's going to dismiss the right's criticism, but do you think anything is happening in the Republican Party today that parallels what happened with the Democrats after 1988, after the first George Bush succeeded Ronald Reagan? The Democrats had lost three presidential elections in a row, and the response was to create the centrist DLC and begin to move to the center with the rise of Bill Clinton on free trade, on welfare reform, on a balanced budget, even if the Republican Gingrich Congress had to really push him to conclusion on those things. The era of big government is over. That came later. Picking a fight with rapper Sister Souljah. They strategically moved to the right to be acceptable in national elections. I think you'll agree with the history. Do the Republicans today have to move to the left on some things if they hope to win the White House or Senate majority in the future?
I sort of reject that whole construct. I don't think it's a matter of being more moderate or more conservative. And we actually heard some sentiments, from Rick Perry and others on the stage that the party needs to be more conservative. That's all that ails it. We just need to be smarter and more relevant. And so I don't think it's a matter of going to the middle or going to the right. And we're post-election, we've seen top Republicans, Bobby Jindal, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, talking about needing new policies that connect more. So I think that sentiment is out there, but the policies aren't. And that's going to take some time to develop those and develop a consensus around them. And finally, Brian, the last point I'd make on this is I think ultimately it kind of depends on a presidential candidate and a leader striking out a new direction. And Bill Clinton, I don't think anyone in the Democratic base was particularly enthusiastic about a lot of his centrism, but they were desperate to win. And he sort of led the way on it. And I think that's probably what you're going to need to see on the Republican side as well. And then one last, I know I said that was the final point, one last thing. It also just depends a lot on events. And if you look after the 2004 election, Democrats were desperate to appeal to so-called values voters.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Dean talked about how Democrats need to get more serious about faith. And is that the way the Democrats came back? No. They came back really on a series of debacles that happened on the Republicans' watch. So a lot of this is unpredictable and just depends on the other guys messing up.
All right. Thoughts about CPAC and the state of the GOP and the state of national politics from Rich Larry, editor of National Review and columnist for Politico. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, how to inspire kids into math and science. Stay with us.